Good morning. It is 7:49, and you are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Tuesday, August 21st, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Sheldon Jackson's College's Board of Trustees says it strengthened its claim to the area around Readout Lake. The trustees announced Monday that they've filed legal paperwork better documenting an earlier claim to the popular sport and subsistence fishing area. Readout is about a 15-mile skiff ride south of Sitka. Board Vice Chairwoman Heather McCarthy says the claim is not part of the larger effort to pay off the closed college's debt.
We will not be using ownership of Readout to develop or change in any way the current use of the property. Our goal is to continue to make available to the general public the access to the subsistence sockeye fishing that is so important to the community, as well as the continuation of the fisheries enhancement that takes place that the Forest Service runs in the lake.
The 160-acre claim includes Readout Falls, the west end of the lake, and part of the nearby bay. Attorney Cabot Christensen says Russian colonists used the area for about 70 years and built a small town. It was sold around the time Alaska became United States territory and changed hands several times since. He says Readout was deeded to Sheldon Jackson College in 1981. Sea Alaska Corporation selected some of the property more than three decades ago under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The effort moved forward slightly last year, raising some objections. Christensen says the trustees decided to speed legal action after reviewing the Southeast Regional Native Corporation's paperwork.
We became concerned that the fisheries protection was not going to be sufficient to protect the fisheries program that was ongoing, that's been ongoing there for the last 30 years. And we also became concerned that the public access rights were not being protected.
It's difficult to prove ownership because the deed documenting Russian sale into private hands is missing. The legal claim filed by the trustees is called a color of title, which documents ownership after that sale. There's no timeline for the claim process. Sea Alaska will likely respond to the trustees' filing. Earlier this year, the corporation's chief attorney said the college's documentation covered only buildings, not land. We'll have more on that perspective in a later report. The college is looking for one or more partners to share management of the site, should it succeed. That group or groups would eventually become owners after what's left of Sheldon Jackson ceases to exist. Trustee Rob Allen says one option would be a group such as the Nature Conservancy. Did you know the United States Army and Stikine Tlingits fought a battle in Wrangell almost 150 years ago? If you didn't, you're not alone. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on an effort to find out more about the clash.
Tis Peterman has lived in Wrangell all of her life, but until a few years ago, she'd never heard of the 1869 Battle of Wrangell.
I happened to come across it when I did some research for the museum that was built here.
Peterman works for the Wrangell Cooperative Association, the Southeast Community's tribal government.
And it was just this buried little story. And I hadn't heard from anybody else on it. And when I looked further, it was just an interesting piece of Wrangell's history that I'd never heard about before.
That could change. The Cooperative Association and the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute are combining efforts to research the conflict and somehow commemorate the event. A $32,000 grant from the National Park Service's American Battlefield Protection Program is funding the effort.
The objective of the project is not only to understand the battle, but to understand where it occurred.
Zachary Jones is archivist and collection manager for the Heritage Institute, the cultural arm of Southeast's Regional Native Corporation. He says the research could allow for improvements to the site.
Development could include naming it a national battlefield, development of the area for tourism, or just telling the story, or perhaps even a memorial.
Jones says most of what's known comes from a military report to Congress. That document says the conflict began at a gathering on Christmas night, 1869. One version says a Stikine Tlingit man bit a finger off a white woman who was part of the Army presence at Fort Wrangell.
The conflict originated over a domestic dispute, which then escalated into a military mobilization.
That led to the death of two Stikine men and a white man. The military also bombarded the village,
It was largely a two-day conflict, which involved cannon fire from the U.S. Army and small arms fire exchanges between the Tlingit and the Army.
The battle caught the attention of officials in Washington, D.C. There were hearings before Congress, and the Army did not come out well.
This event happened during a period in American federal Indian policy where the federal government was trying to tone down violence, trying to stop the so-called Indian Wars. So a very critical report was developed by a federal official about the conflict that condemned the actions of the U.S. Army. And this action contributed to a military drawdown in Alaska.
The Army also shelled the Tlingit village in Cake and other locations in 1869, not long after the U.S. took over Alaska from Russia. Jones says they were not coordinated attacks, but had similar origins.
The Army was here trying to stamp out any aspects of Tlingit sovereignty. They used tactics of brutality that were very common during the Indian Wars period.
Other regional battles included the Navy's bombardment of Angoon about 10 years later. The grand award was announced earlier this month. Peterman of the Wrangell Cooperative Association hopes it expands knowledge of the conflict.
I think this research from this particular grant will find out if there's anybody that has passed down this story at all.
She also hopes the information gathered will better balance the written record. I'm Ed Schoenfeld reporting.
Read the congressional report on the battle and see photos of Wrangell in the late 1880s. Both are posted within the report on our website. In recent months, some fishermen in Alaska have reported catching halibut described as mushy. The organization that manages the halibut in the North Pacific is looking for additional information about the issue. KDLG's Mike Mason explains.
The organization that researches and helps manage halibut in the North Pacific is the International Pacific Halibut Commission. Over the past couple of years, the commission has received reports of halibut described as mushy or jelly-like. Greg Williams is a biologist with the IPHC. He says the vast majority of the reports of mushy halibut have come out of the south central area of the state.
To date, it's been pretty much just anecdotal and kind of randomly reported. So we're just not sure just how that represents the true distribution of the occurrence. And we're, by putting out information, requesting information through our website, we're trying to get better information on the geographic scope and the seasonality of it, and that may give us some ideas, some directions on how to proceed looking more into it together with maybe ADF&G as well.
Reports of mushy halibut are nothing new. Reports date back to the late 80s, but the reports have become more frequent the past couple of years. Williams asserts they don't know why that is.
Sort of some of the things we're looking into, trying to glean what we can from where people see it, when they see it, what size of fish they see it in. Maybe information on where they're fishing, the depths, near shore, offshore, other species they may be encountering, any of that sort of thing that can kind of give us some ideas of what may be involved with this syndrome.
The cause of the mushy halibut is currently unknown, but it's thought to be due to poor nutrition. So far, the vast majority of the reports of mushy halibut have come from sport fishermen, and in an effort to gather more information, the IPHC has set up a spot on their website for people to make reports. The website of the International Pacific Halibut Commission is at iphc.int. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Juneau police say a driver with a medical condition crashed into a local mall. Police got word just before 8:30 a.m. Monday that a 1998 Ford Expedition left the roadway and ran into the Nugget Mall building. Police did not immediately release more information, such as the driver's name and condition. The Alaska Public Offices Commission has refused to consider a complaint over campaign ads against the group Vote No on 2 on an expedited basis. The commission decided instead to handle the matter on a regular schedule after an attorney for the group said that the ads had been fixed to comply with state law. The group behind Ballot Measure 2, the Alaska Sea Party, filed a complaint alleging that Vote No on 2 TV ads didn't properly include the names of its top three contributors in the audio narration. The group wanted the commission to address the issue immediately, but Tom Amadio, an attorney for Vote No on 2, said the ads were pulled when the group realized that there was a problem and new ads would audibly name top donors. Anchorage police are warning of a credit card scam that has resurfaced, this one involving hotel guests. Police say people are calling hotel rooms at random. When a guest answers, the caller identifies themselves as being from the front desk. They said there was a problem with their credit card and asked guests to repeat their card information. Police say in a release that charges are put on the card from other locations within minutes. Officials remind people to never give out information to anyone whose identity is uncertain. In cases like this, the Better Business Bureau suggests you hang up and call the front desk to ensure authenticity. Police say oftentimes the people behind the scam are in foreign countries and can't be tracked down. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here is a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today will be mostly cloudy with a few sprinkles, with highs around 58, northwest wind 5 miles per hour shifting to the southwest in late morning and afternoon. Tonight, showers are likely, lows around 52 and light winds. Wednesday, showers likely, highs around 59, light winds becoming northwest 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. And Thursday, mostly cloudy, scattered showers with highs around 60, west wind 10 miles per hour.